This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show number 63. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
My name's Semyon Yakutse in Montreal.
Coming up on the show, Gary Palmer gives us another insider batting tip and we answer your questions. Semyon Yakutse joins me again for the show. Welcome back, Semyon.
Thank you, David. Good to be back on the show with you.
Yes, we said Happy New Year last time, but just in case anyone missed it, Happy New Year to everyone who's listening to the show.
All the best for 2010.
So this week we've not had much, I don't think you or I have had much in terms of cricket. I don't know what you've been up to, but we've been very much doing very little with the snow falling. And of course, it's the British way that you can't do anything as soon as it's either a little bit cold or a little bit hot.
I actually got a little bit of cricket in just yesterday because all the facilities were closed for the festive season. Yeah. The holidays. So yesterday was the first bat in about 2 weeks, which is really good. We're at the indoor facilities just doing the last little bit of construction work before we can officially open. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we got that up and running. That was pretty good. Little bowling machine practice.
Okay, how did that go?
A little rusty. It's crazy how short you need to be away from the game to not be at 100%. It took a couple of sessions, took about 2 15-minute sessions to start to get the groove back. And then I had a little bit of a longer one, a 45-minute after that, and that was really good.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because this week I've been talking to Lawrence Houghton, who, if you're a regular listener, you know he is the researcher who is doing some PhD research using pitch vision at the University of Western Australia. And the research he's doing involves batting in the nets for long periods. So it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things that he said was in the research he's doing is that the people were really enjoying batting for a couple of hours in the nets while he's doing his research. So it's good practice, you know. How often do you go in the nets for a couple of hours?
Very rarely. Yeah. If he needs any more guinea pigs, he can ship me over there, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. What he's doing there, just to remind everyone who's listening, what he's doing there is he's the research he's looking into is how fatigue affects performance of batsmen at all levels. So he's got people at sort of very high Australian grade level, and he's got people at much lower, more recreational level. And what he does, he's got a bowling machine and he's got pitch vision set up in the net. And as you know, Senior, pitch vision is, because you've got one there, haven't you? Pitch vision is the sensor equipment that allows you to track where the ball is bowled and where it's hit. And what he's doing is he's using that to show the batsman how they're batting. He sets up a screen at the end of the net that the batsman's at. And he bowls using a bowling machine. He uses 20-minute scenarios. You know, he sets up a scenario like, you know, it's the 25th over of a one-day game, and you've got to bat for 20 minutes. And he's got a recording of what runs the batsman has to score in that over. So it might say you have to score a boundary and you have to score two singles in this over. And then the batsman plays the bowler, the bowling machine, and then pitch vision tells the batsman how many runs he scored, and he has to try and match as closely as possible. So it's almost like a game, if you like.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
It is. And because it lasts for 2 hours, each batting session lasts for 2 hours because it's 6 20-minute scenarios, he's really challenging the batsman in a number of areas. He's challenging them in their fitness and in their concentration levels. And he's tracking how much their skill is affected by batting for long periods. So it's all quite, you know, how much they hit the gaps and, you know, batting at the end compared to batting at the beginning and things like that.
That's interesting. Is he able to single out concentration as well, or is it all kind of tied together in his analysis?
Well, he's still that's the interesting part, because of course he's still getting the data together now. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do with that data once he's got it.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah. And what he's saying that's coming out of it, sort of anecdotally, what the people are saying, you know, as they're doing it. I mean, this isn't part of his research, but what he's noticed is that the players are saying it really helps them with their concentration, because balls are coming every 35 seconds from the bowling machine. Mm-hmm. And they really have to be aware of that switching on, switching off thing that we were talking about last week.
Right.
And the other thing he's saying that's good about pitch vision is that it's allows him to compare how batsmen played a certain line and length of balls. So, you know, if someone's always playing back to a good length delivery when perhaps, you know, they should be playing forward or something like that. So he said it, although he doesn't do that, he said he can see how it's useful from a coaching viewpoint. Is that the kind of thing that you use pitch vision for?
Yes. What I've actually got the guys doing is I've hooked up a camera to to my computer.
Yeah.
And I've been synchronizing the video with the pitch vision results, so that the kids can see when they're going on the front foot, when they're going on the back foot. For certain drills, sometimes I'll tell them, do me a favor, play forward as much as you can. And other times I'll say, play back as much as you can. Ask them for differences in the way they feel in the runs that they score. And the nice thing about it is that I'm not using a piece of cloth on the wicket or drawing an area on the wicket for them to target. I'm actually using the pitch vision system to give them that feedback. Mm-hmm. So, and they go home, they can look at it. They can go onto YouTube and watch their videos, which are all private. So it's kind of like, you know, they're really enjoying the experience. I can say that much. And they're learning a lot from it.
Interesting. Another thing that Lawrence talks about, although again he hasn't had the data in yet, so he doesn't know for sure, but he's quite interested in looking at the how much the batsman performance changes over the period of the 2 hours. And what he said to me was he was guessing that it starts quite low as you sort of get your eye in, goes up as you get your eye in, sort of levels out, and then the longer that you go, the more it tails off as you get more tired. So you play and miss more, or you know, you edge it more, or whatever, you middle it less.
Okay.
And one of the things he again anecdotally thinks might be happening is that although it's quite similar for all levels, that it starts quite low and goes up quite quickly, with the better batsmen it doesn't tail off anywhere near as much as with the lesser batsmen. With the lesser batsmen, the more tired they get, the more they're affected by, the more their skill is affected. So I don't know. I don't think anyone's really looked at that. You know, you just kind of assume that you're either fit enough and you can bat for long periods, or you're not fit enough and you can't bat for long periods. But I think maybe there's sort of more shades of grey than that, and it'll be interesting to see his results.
That's a very. It's going to be. I'm definitely going to be following that. If you have any way of posting the feedback on the Pitch Vision website, that would be really, really cool. It sounds very interesting.
Well, we're keeping track of it all the way. I mean, this is at the moment we're just chatting because he can't really give us any. You know, it's part of his PhD research, okay. So he doesn't want to give anything away or corrupt the results or you know, preempt the results or anything like that. But okay. Every step of the way, we're kind of tracking it. We're chatting to him, and we, you know, every time we update it, we'll put a little news release out saying that what he's found, and so we'll keep it as up to date as possible, because it's good to see people using pitch vision in innovative ways.
Yeah. That's the one thing I like about it, is that it can be adapted to wherever in the world it needs to be used, from Zimbabwe to England to New Zealand to Canada, different levels, different cricket cultures, and pitch vision fits right in. That's really cool.
And speaking of coaching, we've got Gary Palmer back with us this week for another coaching tip. As you know, Gary's a former first-class cricketer for Somerset, and now he runs CCM Academy, which is his own academy that helps young players get into the professional game here in the UK. And you can find out more at www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. So I caught up with Gary a little bit earlier. Let's see what we chatted about. Hi, Gary. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Dave.
This week's question is from Kendra, and she has emailed in about her son, who is sounds like a talented young player because he's done well with his district, and he's been put forward to be selected for his county age group to do the trials for that. But he's never done anything like that before. He's only 10 years old. So the question is, what would the county selectors be looking for in a player compared to what the district selectors would be looking for?
I think they'd probably be looking for somebody with already a well-polished technique. Someone who's got a really good technique. That's a good starting point. Somebody who's good at judging length and line and being able to lead the ball outside off stump as a batter in the net. But when you start going up into the county, you know, the better teams rather than the district teams, then the county coaches, I think, are looking for people that are totally committed, hard-working, people that are fit, people that are in shape, you know, that they're not overweight, batsmen that have courage. You know, it's no point a young lad going up to the higher level if he's frightened to death of a cricket ball. So that's quite a important one, very high on the list. But I think above all, your overall work rate, discipline and ability to listen to people and take on board the information, to go away and practice on your own and just be fanatical about wanting to play for a county. If you're just doing it because you want to play cricket and get a bit better, but really you don't really want to go all the way, I think they would see that. And I think they want to be able to invest in young players that do want to play county cricket. So really, it's all the things that, you know, your county player has in the toolbox, isn't it? It's your commitment, work rate, will to win, self-belief. There's stronger characters. A strong character is probably a big thing they're looking for. More of a toughened cricketer.
And would you say that it's also important not to be discouraged if he doesn't make it? You know, at the age of 10, it's not the end of the world if he doesn't make it this time around, and he can always apply himself a bit harder for the next time, for the under-11s or the under-12s or whenever that chance comes around.
Oh, definitely. I mean, at 10 years old, you know, you've got a hell of a lot of time to sort out your cricket, you know, the way you bat, the way you bowl, the way you field. People develop at different speeds. Sometimes the ones that develop late and have to go away and work harder at their game, they work out quickly. The process of practice and how to get better. Well, sometimes the more talented player, they're just so talented, they don't work at their game. It just happens. But you know, the lad who's not so good, who's gone away and worked all these processes, is the one that could well overtake the talented player, who might have become a little bit lazy, you know, thinks he knows how to do it, and therefore, by the time the lesser player gets level with him, the lesser player now has the sort of processes to keep moving on, and the talented player has to now start to find out how to do that. And it's not easy to just instantly click into doing all the things that are going to make you a good player. So it's all about routine, isn't it? And the one who's working hard at his game, who hasn't got there, is going to get that routine in place. He's going to have that hunger to bounce back. And maybe those are things that more talented player hasn't bothered with because they didn't need to. They're just doing all right, and they get a bit lazy and think it's just going to happen. And it doesn't just happen. There's not one top player who hasn't put in hours and hours and hours of, you know, quality-specific practice. And, you know, I've got an example myself. I played for England under 15s a few years early, England under 19s. Everyone thought I was going to play for England. It didn't work out. Ian Botham never got into any of those England 15s and 19s age groups. And look where he went. He went on to play for England to become a fantastic all-rounder. So, you know, there's a lot can happen between sort of 10 and sort of 17. But the people that are going to go away, work at their game, get all the processes in place, will be the ones that actually do quite well. To be talented alone is not enough. And I think you'll find that most talented cricketers that get there, or world-class players, just happen to be talented and world-class practicers. That is a talent within itself, and a really important one.
And if you'd like coaching from Gary Palmer, you can attend his academy or get all his drills and tips online. Visit pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Okay, now it's time for the reader's questions section of the show. So we've got some more brain teasers for you, Senyo, to see if we can get to the bottom of the problem.
Okay.
And the first question is from Damien. And Damien is having a batting problem. He says, okay. The in-swinging York is a problem for me. And I have another problem. I want to boost my strike weight. I'm 14 years old and I'm from Jamaica, and my coach has no problem with me scoring slowly. He always says time in the middle equals runs, but I don't think my strike rate should be 15 runs per 100 deliveries. Can you help? So there's two things there. First one is in swinging York is a problem for him. I'd say it's probably a problem for everybody, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes. Definitely. It's a wicket-taking ball. Coaches left, right and centre are coaching their bowlers to bowl it as a wicket-taking delivery. So I would say there are a couple of pointers that the kids around the age of 14 that I've coached have come up with, I find common, And that would be a lot of the time, especially when the bowler is quick enough to trouble them with the Yorker, I find that their balance is leaning to the offside a lot. When their weight is falling over, when their head falls over to the offside, the tendency is to kind of be playing over yourself, and the ball will always, anything that angles in towards you will either hit you on the pad or knock your stumps over. That's just off the top. So he needs to just make sure he's got his balance right and got his head still. The second thing would be possibly a high backlift. There's nothing wrong with a high backlift. At 14 years old, though, the chance of you receiving the type of bowling that would require a higher backlift is a little bit... It depends on what level of cricket he's playing, I should say that. If he's playing at his age group and everyone's bowling at about 50, 60-odd miles an hour, it's going to be foolish. Nothing's going to be short enough or quick enough to trouble him, where he would need his bat to be coming from anywhere higher than approximately stomach height. I would ask him to probably just take a look at where his hands are, see if he shouldn't drop them just a fraction, a couple of inches. That might help as well.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I was going to say that as soon as he said the in-swing York is a problem for me, I thought about someone falling over to the offside. I think players can get a little bit too side on, if that's not a contradiction in terms. And they can close themselves off, so they're having to play, as you say, they're having to play a bit around their own body to try and get to the ball, and that's a disaster when it's a Yorker.
Yeah.
The good news is that a Yorker is a very hard ball to bowl, and a lot of the time it just ends up as a low full toss, which is handy. And if you're lined up correctly, then you can either, if it's a good ball, if it's a Yorker, you can just jam the bat down and keep it out. And if it's it turns out that it's a low full toss, you can drive it through the V and score an impressive boundary, which always looks good.
True. Oh yeah. That's a pretty interesting one. It's kind of hard to judge the length of a Yorker, especially early on in your innings. I suppose that's why it's such a troubling delivery.
I think the key is staying in line, to keeping your head over the line of the ball rather than letting it fall away to the offside. Because as soon as you do that, it's a disaster.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be curious to ask this young man if he has the same sort of problem with just any typical Yorker, not necessarily an in-swinging one. That would narrow it down quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you listen, Damien, get in touch with us and let us know. So the other part of his question is he's a bit worried about his strike rate being just 15. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say mindset. It's start with the mindset. When you go out to bat, be very positive. Everyone will try to bowl you wicket-taking deliveries. Do your best to either keep them out, leave them alone, whatever you need to do. If you do get a bad ball, and I'm pretty sure in 100 deliveries you would get 15 or more, or at least scoring deliveries, not necessarily bad balls. At that point in time, you need to back yourself to score runs off those deliveries, get some sort of momentum. I do agree with this coach to a large extent, though. I would much rather have a player who's a bit too patient than one who doesn't have enough patience. Time in the middle is priceless. Be positive. And, you know, if you continue in that line, you will be successful. You will increase your strike rate gradually. You'll build your confidence and you'll have that snowball effect working for you.
Yeah, I agree completely. Yeah, it's definitely about mindset. You know, as soon as you start thinking, I've got to get on with it and start playing shots which are outside of your technique, then you're not going to have any runs. You're going to be out. So it's better to even if you've got a limited range of shots, which, you know, at 14, you probably have, you know, not many 14-year-olds have got all the shots.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you've got a limited range of shots, stick to the shots you know and develop the ones you don't know and keep working on it. I mean, what I find a lot with teenagers especially is you get, a 14-year-old, you get a 14-year-old who looks like he's 21 and you get a 14-year-old who looks like he's 11.
That is so true.
If you're an 11-year-old, even though you're 14 years old, then you're not going to be able to score quickly because it's very hard to hit the ball with enough distance.
That's true.
Whereas if you've had your growth spurt at age 14, you know, you might be able to knock it out of the park with a great deal of ease, and you're watching all the other boys smashing it all over the place, and you wonder why you can't do the same thing. Well, you will be able to in time, and I guarantee you, at age 18, if you've developed a good technique, then when you catch up, when you have your growth spurt, you'll be in a much better position than the guy who had his growth spurt early and then used his strength advantage to smash it all around and didn't worry about technique too much.
Damien, I hope you're listening to that. If you're intent on playing the sport for a long period of time, then think of the hare and the tortoise. You know, you might feel like you're crawling in this race, but when you do gather momentum, your competition would probably be running out of it. So that's a very, very, very good point from David there. Good foundation and gives you a very good building.
And the other thing that I'd say about that is learning how to run between the wickets is absolutely critical, because you can pick up so many runs, especially at junior level. You can pick up so many runs if you just keep your eye on the fielders and you know who the bad fielders are, and you know who the ones are who don't quite pay attention, and you know they're making daisy chains when you tap the ball to them, and you can run an easy single to them compared to the really good fielder who's standing at cover and you wouldn't want to take him on. But there's always one or two players like that in junior cricket who you can take runs to, and just keeping an eye on which players are right-handed and which players are left-handed. And if you hit one to a right-handed player's left side, chances are you can grab a run, as long as the non-striker's paying attention as well. So there's ways you can improve the strike rate without taking any extra risks, just by being a bit more aware of what's going on. That's the other thing.
That is true. He can carry that positivity with his batting into his running between the wickets as well. I mean, that is part of your batting. Mm. So make sure you're positive and look for singles as well. That's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, even at the level I play, which is reasonable club standard, nothing fantastic, but reasonable club standard, you so often you can pick up singles in that way. even at that level. So you know, at junior level, there's plenty to be had if you just if you keep your eyes open and you're aware of it.
That's true.
Okay, so I think we've covered that in quite detail. Let's move on to our next question. It's from Gerard, and he says he spends most of his time fielding on the boundary, and he has no problem chasing the ball and throwing it with accuracy, but he can't seem to get the ball in quickly and powerfully straight into the keeper's gloves. It always bounces a couple of times before it gets to the wicketkeeper.
Okay.
So that's a that's the problem when the batsmen are running to steal singles that are towards the end of an innings. And he thinks he could get more run outs and cut out more runs if he had a quick and powerful throwing arm.
Okay, fair enough.
So what he'd like to know is how to increase his throwing arm speed from a long distance, anywhere from the boundary to sort of the edge of the inner circle.
Okay. I'd just like to ask him a quick question before I go into how he can increase his strength. And that would be quite simply, has he ever, like, is he an outfielder by choice? Does he like fielding on the boundary? Does he prefer it as to fielding in the inner ring? Because just as a rule of nature, most of the time, I found that people who don't necessarily have the strongest throwing arm, at least early on in their cricket careers, tend to have cat-like reflexes. I don't know if it's nature's way of compensating one for another to make sure everyone is a cricket god. But just, you know, give it a try when you're at practice. See how you feel in the slips. See how you feel in the covers. And then from there, you know, you need to have a strong throwing arm regardless of where you are on a cricket field. Mm. So to strengthen the shoulder, there's a couple of exercises he could do in the gym. He needs to make sure he has reasonable dexterity in the arm, obviously. He also needs to make sure his rotator cuffs are strong enough. I recommend he either talk to Rob Amun, have a look at what he has on the Pitch Vision website for reference, or talk to, if he's already a member of a gym, talk to one of his fitness trainers in the gym. Give him basic, show him the basic motion of throwing, and that trainer should be able to give him the information he needs to strengthen those particular muscles. It's a shoulder, rotator cuffs, back, and core, obviously, if he has the correct technique. I jumped that whole bit.
There is, of course, the whole technique thing is the other thing, isn't it? But yeah, I completely agree. I think, you know, a combination of strength, speed, and flexibility, if you're talking about the fitness requirements that you need.
Yeah.
And then once you've got those basics, those are kind of like the building blocks, the foundations. Again, we were talking about them before. Then the technique you can build technique on top of that and improve it on the technique. Unfortunately, there is some bad news, in my opinion, in that some people are just better at throwing than other people.
That's true.
And you just can't.
That's true.
If you've got a very, very bad arm, you're never going to have a rocket arm that you can throw 100 yards straight into the keeper's gloves.
That's true. That's true.
It's just not going to happen. But you can improve. You can always improve where you are.
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember seeing going to cricket when I was younger, seeing people like Philip de Freitas, who had one of the most incredible arms I think I've ever seen. He could feel the ball on the boundary and get it into the flat, throw it into the wicketkeeper from, you know, have 80 yards away, no problem at all. And it looked like it was zero effort to him. It looked like he was chucking it 10 yards. It was just, it's incredible. And someone with that level of talent at throwing, if you haven't got that, you're never going to have that.
That's true, yeah.
But that doesn't mean you can't try and improve. So, you know, don't give up. It's probably my main advice. Yeah, lots of flexibility work, lots of power training in the gym, or even if you don't go to a gym, you can do things like clap press ups, which, if you're a regular listener to the show, you know I'm a big fan of the clap press up. Anything that gets you moving quickly, gets your arms moving quickly, and technique wise, you know, a good stable base, a fast arm. All the things that your coach teaches you to do when you go to training every week, and they say the same thing over and over again, and you think, oh yeah, I already know that. Well, yeah, you might already know it, but are you doing it?
That's true. That's another good point. Yeah.
And if you're not, if you're not doing it, maybe you need to work on it a bit more. Before Christmas, I did some coaching, and we did a lot of grooving with the players, and it was as much a test of their ability to do the same thing over and over and over again and not get fed up and just keep doing it and keep their form and keep their technique all the way through. Doing an hour and a half of tennis ball grooving with the on drive is not fun.
Yeah.
It's a test of it is it, but then, you know, so batting for a couple of hours to score 100 is not always fun.
That's true.
It's a test of interest, like we were saying with the with the simulation, you know, performance drops off the longer that you're batting for. So, you know, the more you can put that into practice, the more you can get your technique perfect. It might seem boring at the time, but it won't seem boring when you perform one of those brilliant runouts.
No, the results will speak for themselves, that's for sure.
Exactly. And yeah, the other thing is stretching, of course. You know, nobody stretches. Nobody ever stretches. Well, maybe that's a generalization, but I would say, certainly in my experience, people don't stretch enough.
That's true.
They only stretch when they're stiff, or they've got they're coming back from an injury or something like that, and it's probably too late then. You need to have been doing it. So stretch as much as you can. Improve your range of motion. That's just the law of physics. The better your range of motion, the more power you can generate, the more power you can put into the ball.
That's true. Yeah, that is true. Definitely.
Okay, well, I think that's all we've got time for this week. So don't forget, if you want more cricket tips, you can head over to our website at pitchvision.com. The site's updated every day. And you can also subscribe to this show for free in iTunes. Just look for My Cricket Coach in the search box, or go to pitchvision.com and click on the subscribe in iTunes button on this week's show notes. If you have any questions for us to answer, then you can email us. You can get us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. So until then, this is David Hinchcliffe in the UK.
And this is Semyon Yakute in Montreal.
Because you've got one there, haven't you? Pitch Vision is the sensor equipment that allows you to track where the ball is bowled and where it's hit.
No, Pitch Vision is the dog's but yeah, it is what you said. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
We can't say that. I have to cut that out.
I know. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist. Sorry, David.
I might find a bleep. Okay.